Late last week, the U.S. Weather Service in Pittsburgh announced that although October had been rather warm, the reality of the change to November and the increasingly low angles of the sun meant that they were no longer going to issue any frost warnings overnight. There wasn't a killing freeze in October, as there usually is, but on November 1st, the growing season was declared over. And in any case, temperatures did drop below freezing this past week. The basil I planted back in June, which had done amazingly well all fall, turned black. We expect this every year. And every year on the first Sunday of November, against a dying landscape and in the face of a killing frost, the church says, but we still see the future, and it is bright as Easter morning. For God has raised Jesus Christ from death, and the future belongs to him. And death, however real it is, does not, will not have the last word. Our first and second readings today testify to that hope. The seer of Revelation and the prophet Isaiah speak in similar ways of a new creation that is on the way. No more tears, no more crying. These readings were not picked for our congregation alone today, but they are part of the church's ancient rhythm of faith. In the Northern Hemisphere, they teach us to see beyond the sun's low angles to a day when the shadow of death is lifted forever. God will come, Isaiah and Revelation say, both of them speaking to people who had known political unrest, debt, war, persecution, pandemic, and death. God will come and will put all things to right. God will come and have his day against viruses and accidents and cancer and the increasing murder rate. God will come and will set a feast of rich foods and well-aged wines, and he will wipe every tear away. That is the future on our horizon. That is grace. But what about the present? What about now, when tears are all too real, and when the short days and the sudden frosts seem like cruel metaphors? Today, Christ cries with us, and like the promise of the future, that too is grace. In our gospel reading today, Jesus' friend Lazarus has died. Jesus had received the message that Lazarus was ill, but was delayed in going. He wanted to wait, he told his disciples, until he could show his power. This would be a sign, a power of life that was his from God's. Lazarus' raising would be a sign from the future into the present. A sign for faith. But when Jesus arrives in Bethany, his focus on the future somehow gets disrupted by the sisters and the weeping people. Lord, he hears, Lord, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died. And through the tears and the cries, all talk of the future and signs and faith slows down. Jesus is, John tells us, greatly disturbed in spirit, which in the Greek is actually something of a rude metaphor. It is as if Jesus' insides are just completely stirred up, harsh and raw. And deeply moved, he too begins to weep. The word that's used here is actually a different word from the one that's used of the weeping of all the rest of the people. It just means Jesus started to cry. Jesus on the path to the house, from the house to Lazarus' tomb. The tears he sheds there are testimony of a kind. If you want to know what Jesus is feeling when a school bus crashes, stealing two precious lives way too soon, go with him to Bethany and Lazarus' house and listen. If you want to know what Jesus is thinking about the more than 500 people in our county who have died with or from COVID, I don't know that God makes that distinction, fall down at his feet like Mary and let the gentle rain of his tears fall on your head. If you want to know what Jesus is doing when he sees you at a cemetery, go with him to Lazarus' grave. See if you cannot hear his insides gurgle as he is deeply disturbed. Let his testimony there tell you that he's crying at mile marker 96 on I-79, that he's crying on the ICU in Seven Tower at Butler Hospital, and that he has been found in the back corner of every funeral this year that's been smaller than it should have been, out of fear of yet more death. At the home of his friend, Jesus shares the sense that death is an insult to God's good creation. Unlike the killing frost, or the lower angles of the sun, or the longer nights, which are just metaphors. Unlike those things, the thing that we experience in death is not part of the natural rhythm of things, but is a power all its own. It's not a trifle or a test of faith on the way to a better future. It is a present thing to be struggled with. Grief hits Jesus in Bethany the way grief hits most of us. At a moment that is totally out of his control, when he was no doubt planning to do something else with his day, deeply disturbed in spirit, it's almost as if you can hear him say, "It just hit me. And I hate how my friend has died." In the prayer book that Lutherans have, that we use for funerals, there's a little section at the back that says other related prayers and readings. And there are a couple that are identified to be used with children. One goes, "Dear Jesus, you cried at the death of your friend. We come to you sad at the death of our friend. Gently hold us when we cry and keep us in your love. Amen." Not sure why this prayer is only identified for use with children. It strikes me as one that could be used for all of us. Maybe it's because in our culture, we aren't always at ease with tears in adults in the way that we are at ease with tears in our children. Maybe somehow we think that tears are something that we grow out of, or at least something that we can hide. I celebrate my 15th anniversary of ordination next month, and in those 15 years, I have simply lost track of the number of times people have told me that they can't come to church because they might cry. But Jesus cried. And in his crying, Jesus blessed our grief in all its forms. Greatly disturbed in spirit, tears. Deeply moved. From Bethany, where he raises Lazarus, Jesus follows on to Jerusalem, where he carries the reality of our tears, our grief, to his cross. Stretching out his arms, he revealed his solidarity with us in suffering and loss. There he became like us on our own worst days. Became like the loved ones that we'll name later on, some of them gone before their time. God raised him from the dead that we might live in hope. And in his rising, I imagine, God wiped his own son's tears off his face as the first fruits, the first sign of a future we will all share, the one the seer and Isaiah saw, where there's no more crying and no more pain. His empty tomb, his cross, are the turning point between this present moment and the future. Listen to him cry at Bethany. Weep with him at Lazarus' tomb, but do not stop there, for there's testimony too on Calvary, testimony in the garden, where a stone has been rolled away, and where, even when the light is low, and the days are long, and the night is cold, and the basil turns black, the promise of life dawns like sunrise in the spring.